It's about 2 o'clock, and this is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated November 18th, 2016. We'll start today's reading on the front page with USS Decatur's new captain sails with City Connection. As you launch yourself outside today, put a proud extra spring in your step. November 18th is now officially Mary Katie Hayes Day. It's also the day that Navy Commander Mary Katie Hayes takes over the captaincy of Decatur's namesake warship, the guided missile destroyer USS Decatur, DDDG-73. When it steams out of its home port of San Diego on patrol, Hayes will be in charge of the 280-strong crew, of which about 20% is female. "That's just so neat," said Decatur City Mayor Julie Moore Wolfe, who signed the city proclamation naming the day for Hayes. "And how often does something like this happen? I'm not an expert by any stretch, but I've never heard of a woman destroyer captain. I'm especially excited about that." Hayes, 39, grew up in Florida, where her parents, Ross and Sue Hayes, still live. But she has bloodlines running through the Decatur area that include several cousins. One of them is banker David Weber, who has gotten to know his illustrious relative well over the years when the close-knit family gathers for regular reunions and shared vacations. "She's about 5'3", fit and on the thin side," said Weber, 68, vice president in charge of business development at BC Bank in Decatur. "She's just very, very unassuming, and yet the thing is, if you knew her, you would want her commanding the USS Decatur. She is a leader." Hayes has proven that at the sharp end of some tough assignments. A fluent Arabic speaker, she was working as an interpreter after the invasion of Iraq, and while visiting a school in the volatile Anbar province, came under fire from an insurgent attack. Hayes and her fellow soldiers secured the children and defeated the attackers after a shootout. She was later awarded the Bronze Star. The captain had graduated the Naval Academy in 1999 and went on to serve as engineering officer, navigator, and damage control officer on guided missile destroyers and cruisers. She's visited more than 40 countries and has recently been serving as second-in-command or executive officer on the USS Decatur. Rounding out her resume, she has served in leading land-based jobs such as congressional liaison within the Surface Warfare Division of the Naval Staff and even as civil affairs team officer in charge with the Special Operations Forces of SEAL Team 1. Hayes holds a master's degree in national security affairs with a Middle East specialty from the Naval Postgraduate School and also graduated from the Defense Language Institute with a certification in Modern Standard Arabic. Even with a background like that, it's hard to imagine the original Commodore Stephen Decatur, 1779 to 1820, would have found it easy to accept the idea of Navy ships commanded by women. But Decatur, who won his own captaincy at the tender age of 25 in 1804, after raiding the pirate stronghold of Tripoli and burning the captured American frigate USS Philadelphia, would no doubt respect the mixture of professionalism and daring of Hayes, who, 200 years later, has spent part of her career chasing Somali pirates off the coast of Africa. And persistent piracy is far from the only danger awaiting the newly minted captain and the ship that bears such a proud name. A prime example is the mission the USS Decatur recently completed, which saw it cruising the South China Sea, close to tiny islands China is attempting to claim as its sovereign territory. The U.S. warship, constantly shadowed by 3 Chinese ships, was there to uphold freedom of navigation under international law. One slight miscalculation on either side, however, and this brewing Cold War could grow heated up in a hurry. Weber said that kind of worry always lurks below the surface when he thinks of his courageous cousin out there on the deep blue sea, safeguarding her nation and going eyeball to eyeball with its rivals and potential foes. But like I said, she is a very strong individual with the qualities of command about her, Weber added. I have a lot of confidence that if there ever was a need, she would step up to the plate and deliver. In government and politics, House fails to override in-home care veto, Springfield. Changes are on their way for a program that provides in-home care for more than 80,000 elderly residents after the Illinois House failed to override Governor Bruce Rauner's veto of a bill that would have preserved the existing program. Despite warnings from advocates that the changes could result in the loss of services such as assistance with household chores for thousands of elderly residents, House Democrats on Thursday came up four votes short of the 71 they needed to override the Republican governor's veto. The Department on Aging will now move forward with implementing changes to the Community Care Program, which is designed to help keep older residents in their own homes and out of nursing homes. Facing a growing elderly population and rising costs, the Rauner administration is planning an overhaul of services for more than 40,000 people in the program who don't qualify for Medicaid, the joint state and federal insurance program for the poor. Those people will be shifted into the department's new community reinvestment program, which officials estimate will save the state $200 million annually by providing services more efficiently. One example the administration has offered is having a service pick up and drop off laundry rather than paying an in-home worker to do it. The Illinois Department on Aging worked diligently to develop a thoughtful, person-centered program that will allow our state to continue serving increasing numbers of older adults across the state in a fiscally sustainable manner, spokeswoman Veronica Vera said. It is encouraging that members of the General Assembly recognize the value of this program and its primary objective, to allow seniors to live independently in their homes and communities longer. But many members of the General Assembly don't see it that way. State Representative Greg Harris, Democrat of Chicago, the bill's sponsor, said rolling out the changes statewide is a risky proposition. Harris called the department's proposal a pilot program that has not been tested. It is something that could very well put our homebound seniors at risk, he said. If the program doesn't work, it could result in more elderly residents moving into nursing homes, which would cost the state more, Harris said. Vera said the department is working with local agencies that will implement the program to develop the rules that will govern it. AARP Illinois, which opposed the new program and supported Harris's bill, will now work to shape the rules to make sure that those currently in the program continue to receive services, said Lori Hendren, Associate State Director. We're going to continue to have conversations with the Governor's Office and with the Department on Aging as they move forward with their initiative of the Community Reinvestment Program and to discuss improvements and reforms to the Community Care Program now, which can better sustain in-home and community care services for all those in the program, Hendren said. One of the AARP's concerns is the state might create a waiting list for the new program if there aren't enough resources to go around, but the department said it doesn't anticipate the need for one. In national news, Surgeon General issues new call to action on addiction, Washington. When Dr. Vivek Murthy left his Massachusetts hospital 3 years ago to become U.S. Surgeon General, the nurses who had known him since he was a resident had a parting plea: do something about addiction. On Thursday, with his tenure nearing an end, Murthy tried to make good on that request with the release of a first-of-its-kind report calling for a cultural shift in how we think about addiction. For far too long, too many in our country have viewed addiction as a moral failing, Murthy said in the report. It is a chronic illness that we must approach with the same skill and compassion with which we approach heart disease, diabetes, and cancer. Murthy was scheduled to speak at a forum on substance abuse in Los Angeles on Thursday afternoon. The report comes at a time of great concern about addiction and uncertainty about how the Trump administration will respond to it. Drug overdoses have surpassed car accidents as a cause of death in recent years, a surge driven by the opioid epidemic. Prescription painkillers have killed more than 200,000 people since 1999, and their abuse has led to a resurgence in heroin addiction. The 426-page report titled Facing Addiction in America was modeled on the 1964 Surgeon General's report on smoking and health that first linked cigarettes to cancer and led to a successful national campaign against tobacco use. Murthy described the report as a new call to action. It lays out recommendations for elected officials, the medical community, law enforcement, and the public to improve the way addiction is treated. More than 20 million Americans suffer from substance abuse disorders, far more than are diagnosed with cancer. But only about 10% receive treatment, according to the report. Murthy said that stigma surrounding addiction dissuades people from getting help, and the report repeatedly referred to addiction as a chronic brain disease. Many advocates had pinned their hopes on Hillary Clinton, who had pledged to spend $10 billion on a wide-ranging initiative to combat addiction. President-elect Donald Trump's position is less defined, and a rollback of the Affordable Care Act could mean less insurance coverage for measures Murthy described in his report, such as the use of medications to treat addiction. There's no question we missed our best chance to revolutionize this space when Hillary Clinton lost, said former Representative Patrick Kennedy, Democrat of Rhode Island, a recovering addict who has long advocated for better mental health care. He said he was trying to give Trump the benefit of the doubt on addiction issues, noting that the president-elect lost his brother to alcoholism and that many voters who supported him come from states devastated by abuse. The hardest-hit sections of the country in the opiate crisis are red states, Kennedy said. In the run-up to the presidential primaries in New Hampshire and Iowa, areas reeling from opioid abuse, addiction was a central campaign issue, with candidates sharing stories about family members and friends who were affected. The deeply divided Congress passed rare bipartisan legislation to address the opioid epidemic last year, but Republicans ultimately balked at President Barack Obama's request for $1 billion of funding to implement the measures, and the issue faded in the general election. We were really disappointed that the issue didn't come up in any of the debates, said Greg Williams, the co-founder of the nonprofit Facing Addiction, which is working with the Surgeon General's office. He said Murthy's report offers a roadmap for solving the problem, and the challenge is we have to find the public will to implement what we know can work. In local news, new license plate design yields more jobs for Decatur. Renetta Lippert was working part-time as a certified nurse assistant. Her husband was temporarily off work with a back injury, and they were expected to have 3 children in college this fall. Luckily for the family, the 39-year-old Decatur woman is one of 12 new employees hired 4 months ago by MRI, also known as Macon Resources Incorporated, to help manufacture the 1 million new license plates needed by the Illinois Secretary of State's office next month as part of a replacement program starting next year. It's a blessing, Lippert said. I am very happy to be here. The new jobs are but one way Decatur is benefiting from Secretary of State Jesse White's plan to replace the oldest license plates every year starting next year with those originally issued in 2000 and 2001 until starting over in 2027 by replacing those issued in 2017. This is a great opportunity for us to continue the strong relationship we have had with that office since 1983, said Drews Lewandowski, executive director of MRI. It's good for us, good for Decatur, and good for Illinois. Macon County Rehabilitation Facilities began producing all of the state's license plates in 1983, work that was continued by Macon Resources starting in 1988, the year it was created by a merger of the former agency and Progress Resources Center. The exclusive arrangement continued until the last replating project in 2004, when the Secretary of State gave 43% of the work to Waldale Manufacturing in Nova Scotia. Lewandowski said MRI had a contract for 100% of the project this time around and began producing plates earlier this year, according to a new design featuring images of Abraham Lincoln, the Chicago skyline, a farm, and the state capitol. He said he's been discussing the forthcoming replating and new plate design with the state for about a year. White announced the project at a Chicago news conference earlier this week, saying the plan allows license plates to be replaced gradually and within the agency's current budget. The program is mindful of Illinois' state budget challenges while also seeking to remove the oldest plates from our roads, White said. Vehicle owners will receive mail notification if they qualify for new plates at no charge. Those with newer plates that are difficult to read may also apply at www.cyberdriveillinois.com. That's all one word, cyberdriveillinois.com. Motorists who don't qualify but still want new plates can pay $29 and request them starting in January. In addition to hiring 12 new technicians to the 14 already working on the embossing line, Lewandowski said the crew has been working overtime to meet project deadlines, a situation he expects to continue through next June 30th. He also said that many more of the 170 adults in developmental training with MRI are getting chances to add the sleeves affixed to the back of the plates to hold the car's registration, learn some job skills, and earn some money too. All those paychecks are being spent here, Lewandowski said. This is good for the community in so many ways. On the local news page, Crime and Courts, Decatur teen held in two shooting cases. Courtney A. Johnson, Jr., an 18-year-old Decatur man, is being held in jail on $250,000 bond after he allegedly shot a 20-year-old man in the back in an incident that occurred near the Decatur Indoor Sports Center. Johnson is additionally being held on preliminary charges that he shot at people in June, including one of the victims who was in the line of fire in the recent incident. That victim's car was damaged in the earlier shooting. About 4:50 p.m. October 31st, 15 to 20 people gathered in the vicinity of the front porch of 1034 West Macon Street, just east of the DISC disc parking lot on the city's west side. Witnesses observed 2 to 3 males in the alley south of this house, said a probable cause affidavit by Decatur Police Detective Joe Patton. The males in the alley had a clear view of the house at 1034 West Macon Street due to vacant lots. The witnesses told police they heard several gunshots coming from the alley, then saw two of the males in the alley firing a handgun in the direction of the people at 1034, Patton wrote in his statement. Those people then scattered. The victim, who suffered a gunshot wound in the back, was treated and released from Decatur Memorial Hospital. Police found bullet holes in the siding of the house in the area, as well as spent cartridge casings and bullets at the scene. A witness identified Johnson as one of the shooters. Then he gave the police information on a prior shooting incident. He advised he could make positive ID because he actually saw him shoot at him on June 30th when he was passing by in a car in the area of 17th and Wood Streets, said the police affidavit. That man said Johnson was also shooting at him in the October incident. He said he did not initially report that Johnson shot at him in June, but after being shot at again in October, he decided he would. When he was shown a photo lineup, the victim identified Johnson as the shooter in both incidents. Police noted damage to the victim's car consistent with being shot, Patton wrote. Johnson was arrested by the Special Deputy U.S. Marshals on Wednesday afternoon and booked in the Macon County Jail, where he is being held on preliminary charges of aggravated battery with a firearm, aggravated discharge of a firearm, and unlawful use of a weapon. He's due in court by November 23rd for his arraignment. In education, man behind Decatur school meals wins top shelf award. Scott Gregory came through the doors into Eisenhower High School's servery and froze on the stairs as the group below yelled, "Surprise! Surprise!" Cheerleaders lined up at the foot of the stairs and chanted, "We are proud of you, Scott. We are proud of you." "Surprise doesn't begin to cover it," Gregory said, laughing. He is the recipient of the Ring of Stars Award given by Aramark annually to 200 of its 270,000 employees worldwide. Employees have to be nominated by a supervisor for outstanding service, and through a process, the nominees are winnowed down to the final 200, who are invited to the company's annual meeting in Las Vegas. Gregory's son plays football, and this year's meeting conflicted with one of his games, so Gregory didn't go to Las Vegas for his award. Human Resources Director Greg Bertzlaff, Gregory's supervisor, Melissa Pimentel, who nominated him, and the Decatur District Leadership Team conspired to organize the party for him. "He's a good guy," said Interim Co-Superintendent Michael Dugan. "He does a nice job." Todd Kovalt, Chief Operational Officer for the district, said Aramark serves 3 million meals a year in Decatur Public Schools when counting breakfast, lunch, snacks, and meals at after-school programs. Gregory was instrumental in instituting the breakfast program, which allows all students to eat breakfast at no charge to them or their families, and also assisted in instituting the same situation for lunch, thanks to the community eligibility provision of the federal school lunch program. Districts such as Decatur's, with a large percentage of students who qualify for free and reduced price lunch, can apply for CEP status, which allows all students to eat school meals at no charge to their families. It reduces paperwork and increases school meal participation, partly because some of the older students were self-conscious about free meals and skipped lunch rather than risk having their classmates know. "He's done a lot of good things for the district, and we're really proud of him," Kovalt said. Randy Dotson, transportation coordinator, said he and Gregory have a running joke about which of them will get the most complaint calls on a given day. "I have a great crew," Gregory said. "It's my name on the door, and when things are good, I get the praise, and when things are bad, I get the complaints. But I couldn't do anything without them." Again in Crimes and Courts, dropped ID card leads to arrest and gas station shooting. After Keontre Milan allegedly shot at a 25-year-old man sitting in a vehicle at a Westside gas station parking lot, he dropped his ID card at the scene. After police arrived in response to a call that about 20 shots were fired about 3:45 a.m. October 29th, they located his ID card. On the ground, they found three spent 38 caliber shell casings and 11 9mm casings at the southeast corner of El Dorado Street and Oakland Avenue, said a probable cause affidavit by Decatur Patrol Officer Brad Saul. When Parole Officer Andrew Whitmer viewed surveillance video, he saw a black SUV enter the parking lot and park. The front seat passenger of the vehicle then engages in an argument with four subjects on the lot, during which two of the subjects fire pistols at the vehicle. The video shows a male dropping a cell phone and an ID card, which the police found at that spot a short time later. About 5:15 a.m., Milan is captured on the store surveillance camera, returning and searching the lot for his misplaced items. Saul wrote in his statement, "Milan of Decatur was arrested November 9th and booked into the Macon County Jail, where he's being held on $200,000 bond. He was arraigned Monday on one Class 1 felony count of aggravated discharge of a firearm, punishable by 4 to 15 years in prison if convicted. There were no reported injuries in this incident." At the time of his arrest, Milan was on probation for an August 12th conviction on one felony count of aggravated unlawful use of a weapon. In that case, he was arrested March 14th after police found a fully loaded, stolen 357 Magnum pistol in a vehicle in which he was a passenger. He was While he was at the police station, he became ill and admitted to officers that he swallowed heroin, according to a court document. He was originally charged with armed violence, a Class X felony for possessing a firearm while committing the felony of heroin possession, as well as possession of a weapon by a felon and possession of a controlled substance with a prior conviction of that offense. After almost 5 months in jail, he pleaded guilty August 12th to the weapons charge in exchange for a 24-month probation term. He was then released. In his most recent case, Milan is due in court November 23rd for his preliminary hearing. Local briefs for Friday, November 18th. Beecher City, one hurt in wreck. Curtis S. Rogers, 45, of Beecher City, was injured Thursday when his pickup truck left the roadway on Illinois 128, according to the Illinois State Police. Rogers was traveling south on Illinois 128 at the Fayette-Shelby County line at 12:10 p.m. when the truck left the roadway on the west side, struck a culvert, rolled, and came to rest on its roof. Rogers was thrown from the truck. He was airlifted from the scene to HSHS St. John's Hospital in Springfield. His condition was not available. He was cited for improper lane usage and failure to wear a seatbelt. Decatur, blacksmithing. Local blacksmith Steve Knowles will demonstrate basic blacksmithing from 1 to 3 p.m. this Saturday, November 19th, at the Macon County History Museum, 5580 North Fork Road. Admission is $2. For more information or directions, call the museum at 217-422-4919. That's 422-4919. Or visit www.mchmdecatur.org. The recently restored Smith Shop will be closed for the winter. Programs will resume in the spring. Farmer City Christmas Parade. The Farmer City Chamber of Commerce hosts its annual Christmas Parade at 2 p.m. Sunday, November 20th. Nearly 100 entries will step off from the fairgrounds, then lead south on Main Street through the business district. The Blue Ridge, Hayworth, and Lexington High School bands will perform, along with floats, antique cars, and more. Former WCIA weather forecaster Judy Fraser will make her 40th appearance in this Christmas parade. Tech upgrade options headed to Library Board. The Decatur Public Library's quest to improve the technology to check in and sort books may receive less of an update than expected. The Library Board of Trustees gave the go-ahead to City Librarian Rich Meyer during its Thursday evening meeting to wait on receiving a proposal from Bibliotheca before deciding which way to go with its technology upgrade. Meyer said he expects the proposal to come in by the end of the week. The board approved a plan in September for the library to investigate acquiring equipment that would add a significant technological upgrade to how books are checked out, checked in, and sorted. Among the proposed updates included a radio frequency tag in every rented material that could instantly update the system whenever they were checked in, as well as customers to drop off all books at once instead of one at a time. TechLogic Corporation was the company that library officials began negotiating with for the technological improvements, but Meyer said developments over the past 2 months had officials considering other options. The board will meet to approve a purchase order before the plan goes forward, which Meyer was hopeful could be done before the end of the year. Once improved, implementing the new technology would take 6 to 8 months. That's all we have time for the first half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated November 18, 2016. This is Barbara Ridenour. Please stay tuned.